Hello and welcome everyone. I'm Morgan Klein, full-time mom, personal trainer, co-founder, and COO of Burn Bootcamp. I'm here to bring you a strong dose of hot topics such as nutrition, fitness, self-help, style, entrepreneurship, motherhood, and so much more. I strive to inspire you to live your life with greater balance, vitality, and empowerment. So grab a mug and join me for a cup of coffee and kettlebells. Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Kettlebells. Today, I'm excited to welcome our franchise partner of our Frisco and McKinney, Texas locations, Trisha Wainish. She has been with Burn since what feels like day one. She's a mother and a business owner who has even rocked the mic on the floating floor. She's going to break down some hard things that she's been facing in her motherhood journey and how she's faced it head on. So welcome. Yes. So let's talk a little bit really quickly before we dive into the topic, but tell us a little bit about, you know, your background and even your burn journey and just what got you to where you're at today.
Okay. Well, I'm a mom of two girls, which you kind of alluded to. I am a parent. My husband and I have actually been married 19 years, but I always joke I was 12 when we got married. Right. So, but we just celebrated our 19th wedding anniversary. And about 6 years ago, I started at Burn Boot Camp. I had been a stay-at-home mom after a corporate journey. I had been working corporate and never anticipated being a stay-at-home mom, but, you know, one thing led to the next and I was home, part of that being my second baby being premature. And so going back to the corporate workforce seemed almost impossible. And then I started with Burn. I met you, and it's been 5 years now that I've had Frisco open, and McKinney's been open too. And we have moved our family 1,200 miles to be near our gyms. And Mark trains in the early mornings and runs his corporate job during the day. And I run the gyms during the day, and my mom busts in the evenings.
Yes, you guys are killing it. So I know that hasn't come with its own challenges, though, and that's what I would love for us to talk about. Obviously, you know, we have a lot of mamas that are listening to this podcast, a lot of our Burn members. So let's talk a little bit about your daughters. You know, I know that you have been dealing with ADHD, anxiety, dyslexia. Can we talk a little bit about what that looks like in your family?
Sure. So my oldest daughter, who's not quite 12, it was as young as pre-K. I remember going and looking in the window of the pre-K classroom and watching her just bouncing around in the room. Just, you know, the class would be doing something and she'd be doing something else. And I thought, does my kid have ADHD? And I think I even said something at the time to one of the moms. I'm like, do you think my kid has ADHD? And they're like, oh, no, you know, and it's like one of those things. And so we fast forward into kindergarten, and she really, really struggled through kindergarten. And she also had terrible, terrible separation anxiety, which I think is pretty normal in a kindergarten setting, but it didn't stop. And so by first grade, I really wasn't getting what I needed from the school to help understand why she wasn't reading yet, why she was still having this significant level of anxiety. And so I took her and I had her tested outside of the school district. And that is when they told me she had ADHD, she had a reading and writing disability, and severe anxiety. And I asked about dyslexia at the time because she was having so much trouble reading. And I got the answer, not yet. And I was like, what does that mean? So with dyslexia, what I've learned is they don't diagnose that too young. And they also are hesitant to put labels, whether it be the parents often will be hesitant to put a label on a child because it goes in their file. And then, you know, we have to go through the process of now you have a labeled child with a disability. But school districts also don't necessarily want to label a child either. So our journey really started for her in first grade, and she's in sixth grade now. So it's been a long road. And then my little one, fortunately, does not have any form of the ADHD, but definitely suffers from panic attacks. Very different, very, very different than my other one. And we were declined a dyslexia diagnosis in second grade, which is the exact same thing that happened to my older daughter. And so here she is in third grade, and we're going to have to readdress that.
Yeah. So if you could put yourself back in the shoes of like those diagnoses, right? So you talk a little bit about how some parents don't want to be labeled or some schools don't want to label, you know, what's something that you maybe wish you would have told yourself back in that time of maybe how to go about this?
So for sure, you have to be an advocate for your kid. And thankfully, I've had that fight for them in me from day one. It's like those little mama bear claws will come out. It definitely crossed my mind if I have her diagnosed with something, then it is a diagnosis and it's there. But those diagnoses are there to help them, right? So like, it's not a negative. And it's really there to design to give them the accommodations they need to succeed. Because when Tess was diagnosed with ADHD and the reading and writing disability and anxiety all at the same time, I pushed ADHD aside. I was like, doesn't everybody have some ADHD? Oh, please. Now, 6 years later, if you tell me that, I get mad. Like inside, like I'm not going to say it to you, but if somebody goes, oh, my ADHD, I'm like, I don't think you guys don't understand what that is. That is actually a neurological, you know, disability. That is something that is out of their control. Please don't throw ADHD around. Like it is something that we all have because it's not true.
Yeah, absolutely. So I try to like think about, you know me, I've got three kids and Cameron did just start kindergarten. And, you know, I try to think about if that, you know, we're me. And I think I try to, again, go back to these labels. And I'm sure you're so afraid to put a label on your kids because you don't want them to be seen differently. You don't want them to be treated differently. You don't want them to feel differently, right? And so how have you been able to navigate that with your girls? Like, do they know about their labels or diagnosis? And are you able to openly talk about that? Or did you feel like you had to tiptoe around that to protect them?
I'd say that's one of the absolute hardest things that I've dealt with for my, specifically my older daughter with so many different disabilities. And I know there's tons of people out there that have it, you know, much more significant situations than us. But in first grade, you know, all the kids are so lovey and they all still like each other and they help each other and they're kind. And even in second grade, you kind of have that kumbaya. And then third grade hit. Yeah. And third grade for her, she realized she was different. She realized that she was having trouble. She labeled herself as dumb. And she's actually brilliant. She really is. And we had an IQ test done at the same time and she has an above average IQ. It's just the way that her brain works is different. And so we've been having to explain that to her since for now 3 years and try to help her understand you are not dumb. Your brain works differently than, you know, and I hate to say the typical kid, the neurotypical kid, right? Versus the kid that has something. And so, well, I'm not a subject matter expert. I'm a mom that's been dealing with this for some time. And, a lot of times, you know, especially with ADHD, people think kids are going to be hyperactive and they're going to be off the charts and they're going to be jumping up and down. And but she's not hyper. That's only one trait of an ADHD child. She is incredibly distracted, right? So she has the inattentiveness. So she'll sit in her classroom and she'll sit quietly and you'll think she's paying perfect attention. And she looks like an A student because she's just sitting there great. But she's off in La La Land and has no idea what is going on. So, you know, it's finding a way that to teach her. It's between the parents and the teachers and the education system of trying to figure out how to reach this child, right? Because it's not necessarily going to be the same way that you reach another child.
Yeah. And I think that from my own education piece, like how have the schools been accommodating for you and the girls? Like, is there a big opportunity in our education system to still be able to meet meet their students where they're at, right? Like, and to serve them on that individual basis.
Yeah. I mean, we've been really fortunate here in Texas. I've been very, very pleased with how much they've been willing to work with us, but there's still going to be politics involved in every bit of it, right? Like, we got Tess into a 504 within the first month of moving here, her second grade year. And then by January, she had an IEP. Like, they jumped on it. They recognized it, they saw it, and they jumped on it. But that was the same year they declined her for dyslexia. And then a year later, I went back to them and I said, look, I'm going to go outside the school system. Something's just not right. Like, my child should not be struggling like this. And I said, I'm going to go and I'm going to have her tested out, you know, on the economy, so to speak. And I said, can you give me all the documentation that you have done at this school so I can compare and show it to the new person that's going to be testing?
Yeah.
Within 3 weeks, she was diagnosed with dyslexia in her school and I never had to go anywhere. So, you know, it's a fight. It's a fight. And then last year I did the same thing for my second grader and they said no. And here I am in third grade and I'm about to take on that exact same battle. But ironically, in both my girls, their dyslexia manifests completely different, completely different. They actually have very different traits and struggles, and their anxiety is completely different. One has panic attacks that are very, very easy to identify and usually short-lived and just kind of these out-of-control moments. My other one has OCD anxiety. Well, the one thing that I've learned about anxiety is regular anxiety you can rationalize. OCD anxiety you can't rationalize. So you just have to let them sit in it and just kind of, you know, work through it themselves.
Yeah. And is that why schools are so resistant to this? Is because they're having to go out of their way and accommodate, you know, like I'm again trying to like educate myself and even like a listener on here that maybe thinks that this is what they're about to tackle, you know, is it because it falls out of like the normal process of how they teach students and they have to be accommodating and they just resist that?
Unfortunately, yes. And we've had an excellent experience. So I don't want to, you know, say anything negative about their school system because I speak super high of them. But they have to have a case manager now. They have to have special accommodations. And with those accommodations comes more money, right? And so you have to have the special ed teachers. You have to have different teachers. Like my daughter is in an amazing program. It's called Take Flight. And I believe it started here in Texas and I'm not sure where else it is, but it's a 2-year program for dyslexia where they go through each semester, like they go through a process to help with the skills to help them better read and, you know, read and write and understand what they're reading. And that program, you know, you have to have a teacher to it. So like my mom sometimes tells me that, well, she was denied because the program was full, right? She was denied because, and then as I educate myself more for my second daughter, it's like, well, maybe it's not that the program is full, or, you know, it's that they don't have enough funding this year and they need to wait to qualify her so that next year they can get the funding for it. Or, I mean, there's politics to everything. And so I do believe the teachers want to help her. I know when Tess's teacher, when I finally told her second grade teacher that she was diagnosed in third grade, she said, oh, thank God. And it was like all her teachers knew. But they can't, their hands are tied too. They can't diagnose. They're not the diagnostician, right? Like that is out of their realm, but they know, you know, but you got to go through all the process of it.
Got it. So how have you been able to support yourself and really educate yourself to make sure that, you know, you're managing it with your daughters properly? You know, like, is it been any educational resources that you would recommend to any other moms to help navigate what this looks like to be a mom of someone who has this?
Absolutely. Early on, I picked up, it's called Attitude. It's ADD ITUDE, Attitude. They're online. They're a magazine, but they're also, they're on Instagram. They're online subscriptions. They probably even have podcasts. I get the magazine still, the paper one, literally. The paper one comes to in my mailbox still, and it's on auto renew, but there's so many great articles in that. But then also finding, using social media for something other than a waste of time, like finding those resources within that. There are so many places you can educate yourself through different groups and pages and organizations. A lot of times it's the organizations, although there's a couple of moms that I just follow that are amazing, that post about their children and, you know, that atypical behavior and the, hey, I got you type of thing. It's nice to know you're not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll definitely make sure to link that too in the show notes, just so anyone can get that information as well. What would you say has been the biggest blessing or maybe positive thing that you're able to kind of look back and say, coming out of this journey, you know what, what's the bright side, right? What's the good things that I can hold on to that it's helped my kids or my family or me?
Well, for sure, my kids trust me and like really know that I'm there for them and that I'm fighting for them, which is awesome. But one of the other things that came out of this that I wouldn't have necessarily expected it to is to really, it couples into this whole world of what we live in Burn Boot Camp, but we were given a recommendation early on to really look at the food intake of what our kids are eating and what our kids are doing. And so prior to right after that diagnosis in first grade, we set the date of like January 1st, there would be no more dye in our house, food dye. There would be no more high fructose corn syrup coming in our house. We since then have eliminated dairy from our home. And we have just continued to really, make that connection between like you are what you eat and then the exercise. You know, we notice a huge difference in anxiety and the level of anxiety in our kids with the level of activity that they have. And then from a behavior perspective and that behavior modification and the meltdowns and the stress and this, I mean, too much sugar and forget it, right? So like, we're not drill sergeants in our house by any means. My kids get sugar, right? And if they go to a birthday party and there's a cake with dye on it, I might cringe a little bit, but I'm going to let them eat the piece of cake. But when we bring things into our home, we've eliminated all of those things. And I'm very much into health and fitness. I mean, I own a gym, right? Like I'm a trainer. I do all these things, right? But at the same time, it took one counselor just saying to me, hey, you might want to look at eliminating dye. And that was like the beginning of it, you know? And then we've just learned so much about how we eat and how that controls our actual outcome of behavior, you know?
Absolutely. And I think when you do have kids, it's very eye-opening. Like I know gluten is something that we don't allow our kids to have. Of course, they can have it here and there, right? But and it just takes that one podcast that I listened to that like linked, you know, gluten or sugar or dye or all the things that we try to cut out of our diet. Like then why would we want to give them to our kids too? It's going to have just as much impact, if not more, on them as they're just developing at such a rapid rate. That's awesome. That's a great takeaway. So listen, like, what do you do for yourself, right? This has got to be challenging. I'm sure you've gone through a lot of challenging times. Being a mother is challenging in itself, you know? And so what do you make sure that you do to support your mental health and to make sure, you know, that you're taking care of you first because you do have two daughters that you need to advocate for and to be strong for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first I do schedule my workouts in. I have to exercise. I say I exercise away the crazy, you know, I'm not the first one to ever say that and I won't be the last, but it's so true. Like I can walk into the gym just, ugh. And it's hard when you own the gym too, because I always feel like, gosh, like this is my gym. I gotta walk in and like be together. And finally, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago and I've owned this gym 5 years. So I'm not gonna lie, I was faking it a lot, you know, but I mean, there's been some Saturday mornings I walk in and I'm in tears. I'm in tears. The morning has just kicked my butt, right? But I'll go in feeling awful and I'll come out feeling like, okay, I can do this. I can do this, you know? And then when I'm not in the gym, I love to be out in nature. So I love to garden and I love to like, sounds so silly, but I'll go out and trim the hedges and it makes me happy. Or planting some flowers or like just giving me some time to just like do a project. If I can just like get into a project on my own, like I love home improvement and do it yourself. And that is like an outlet for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's like anything that can kind of take your mind off like the to-do list or like just the heaviness of what you have to deal with, like is, it's got to make sure to make time for that stuff, whether it's gardening or something else, you know, like it's so important. So what's one thing, what's one lesson per se that you hope your children will learn from, you know, your story? Or I think even I'd love to hear what's one lesson you want a listener to hear from this story?
Well, there's a couple of things that I think are super important to me now having traveled through that journey. And one is you have to advocate for your child. And if you don't expect the school to do it for you. Don't expect somebody else to do it, to identify it. You know, really trust your mom gut on things. The other one that is big for me is realizing that ADHD is a real condition and that it doesn't affect just boys. And I think that so many people think of ADHD as like that hyper little boy that can't sit in his seat and he's like all over the classroom and it's crazy. And but it is, there's actually four or five different kinds of ADHD. You don't have to be hyper. My kid's not even hyper. She's inattentive. But another one is impulsive. Like if you're very impulsive and can't control your emotions and you might think you have like an angry, raging child, that could be ADHD too. And understanding that these conditions are real, and to the fact, like to the point that if you were to, if we do an MRI of a child's brain or anyone's brain with ADHD, you would see the difference. You would see and be able to diagnose that there is actually something different in their brains, that this is not something made up. You know, I think there was a cover of, maybe it was Time Magazine, it's probably 20 years ago, The Doping of America's Kids or something, and about, you know, the overdiagnosis of ADHD and the over-medication of them. And I don't want to get into medication or not medicating, but ADHD is a very real thing. And I want people to realize that, right? And then I want people to understand that, like, just believing in your children and always being their number one advocate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so really quick, as you say, like the medication, and we've talked a little bit like food, obviously, have you noticed a correlation with screen time and then how this shows up in your kids differently?
So we really do try to limit screen time. And fortunately for us, our girls have, are competitive athletes. So we don't have a ton of screen time, but absolutely. I mean, There's two pieces to that puzzle, though, because one of my daughter's dyslexia traits is tracking issues. So that eye to hand coordination, it's called, she has dysgraphia as well. So it's like when you can't get the brain to paper, so to speak. You can't get your hand, you know it's in your brain, but you can't get onto paper what you want to write. So if you're having tracking issues on a TV or if you have the brain, then a video game is actually an excellent thing to play because you're using your hands to command something that you're seeing with your eyes, right? But aside from that, yeah, absolutely. It should totally be limited in my mind, like too much anything. Like, you know, they talk about best ways to go to sleep at night is to shut down your technology, not have your phone in your room, no TVs in your bedroom, all of these things. Like, yes, those are absolutely very real things.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what motivates you each day? You know, you're running a gym, you have two amazing communities that you're leading, you know, your home. So what motivates you to get up every day and do all of those things?
I mean, those little girls get me out of bed no matter what every single day. But
literally and physically, right? Or like literally and figuratively.
I mean, they are absolutely they're the light. Like they are the little lights of my life, you know, and I want to show them that they can do anything. They're not limited. They're not limited. But also, and I don't know, it might sound cheesy, but my clients, like I think about them and I'm like, they're waiting for me. If I'm going to get on that training floor, like those are my people. And at that moment, I cannot let them down. I got to be there for them. So first and foremost, those little girls get me up. Like you said, I have one, she's an early riser. She will get me up. But you know what? Like I want her to know, even on my worst day, you know, and I'm trying not to scowl. I'm like, you know, it's going to be a good day. It's going to be a good day. We got this. We got this, you know, and oh, I'm so tired. We can rest later. I'm tired too, but we got to keep going, you know, and just showing them that grit, you know, and that the sky's the limit for them.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Well, you're doing a great job. You should be super proud of yourself. I just want to tell you that in case nobody else tells you that today. And I appreciate you coming on and talking about this and, you know, being vulnerable. I know it's going to help so many other people. It helps me, you know, and really it makes me want to re-educate myself on what all of this is and what does that mean, especially, you know, as I am in that prime age of my kids starting school and, you know, and being that advocate. You know, if anything, it's a reminder that we have to be the advocates for our kids to do all that they are possible of doing. So, hey, if people want to find you, where can they find you guys on social? Again, if they're in the area, what's the best way for them to come to the gym?
Okay, so I am on Instagram at Trish Wainish. Super simple there. And then I have Burn Boot Camp Frisco over on Main and Teal. And we are all about cross streets here in Texas. And in McKinney, we are on Ridge and McKinney Ranch Parkway.
Guys, she's got two amazing communities. I've been to both of them recently. So if you're in that area, definitely go check them out. You can find us online, www.burnbootcamp.com/locations to find the one nearest you. And we're always offering a 7-day free trial. So you get plenty of opportunity to see what we are all about. And definitely go follow Trish on social media. We'll make sure to link some of these resources that you talked about today. But thank you guys for listening. Thanks again for joining us today, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you so much for sipping on a cup of coffee and kettlebells with me today. To find a recap of today's show, be sure to check out the Burn Bootcamp blog. To get your daily dose, be sure to like our Facebook page at Coffee and Kettlebells and follow me on Instagram at morgan.a.klein. If you have any questions you'd like answered at the end of my next podcast or have any suggestions for guests that you'd like to see featured on the show, please reach out to me at coffeeandkettlebells@burnbootcamp.com. If you love this episode of the podcast, I'd love to hear from you. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on the iTunes store and be sure to share with your friends. Thanks again, and I hope you join me next time for a refill of coffee and kettlebells.